Welcome back to Two Guys, a Movie, and a Podcast, where we mine the cavernous depths of Netflix to find those gems that might go unwatched or, even worse, unnoticed. My name's Tyler. You can call me T. Doesn't really matter to me.
My name's Malcolm. You can call me Mac or the other guy. Doesn't really matter.
All right. Mac, we are back.
Yes, yes, and glad to be back.
Yes.
And hope you're all still with us, still riding the train, letting us kind of give you insight on some movies.
All right. Well, how about we just get right into this movie for the night, for the day, huh?
Sounds good.
Okay, this week we are talking about A Perfect Day. It is coming to us all the way from 2015. It stars Benicio del Toro and Tim Robbins, among others, but those are really the big stars of the movie. It clocks in at 1 hour and 45 minutes. It currently sits at 6.8 out of 10 on IMDb and has a current Metacritic score of 60. During the Yugoslav Wars, three hapless aid workers head out to dislodge a corpse tainting a village's water. The day goes a bit south from there. I love this movie. It's a pretty simple premise. I think really it has so much fun and energy to it that even though it centers around a corpse in a well in a war-torn country, it keeps a very good nature to it. It's very upbeat. The characters are all, you know, pretty lovable, and it's just a really fun movie.
I think they had a perfect cast for it, honestly. I mean, after watching it, I think seeing someone different in, you know, the roles, I don't think I could see anyone different. I think it was very well acted by Benicio del Toro and was it Tim Robbins?
Yep. Yeah. I think there is a parallel universe where this movie exists with a different cast, and it is a Oscar-winning drama. I think somewhere this film stars George Clooney and, you know, Brad Pitt and maybe Ben Affleck, I guess, but
That's quite the trio,
you know. And it's a drama. There's not a single laugh to be had. It's not fun. It's really depressing. And it wins every Oscar at the awards that year.
Yeah,
I'm very happy that this is not that. It's like I said. It's really fun. It's really energetic. Every character is very likable. Even the characters that aren't likable manage to be likable.
Yeah.
We'll get into that in a little bit too, but it's got a really nice sense of style to it. I mean, it's not flashy or anything, but it matches the location. And I'm not sure if they shot on location, but all their sets and all their settings look very lived in.
Oh, yeah.
And they look very natural. So if they didn't shoot on location, then their set designers really, they went the extra mile, and
right,
they really made everything look authentic, I guess. You know, as far as I know, I've never been to Yugoslavia, so it could be, you know, fairy tales and pixie dust there for all I know.
Right.
This film could be lying to me. Benicio del Toro, he plays a lot of mean people, and he plays a lot of nasty characters. It's just really nice to see him play something where he's trying to do something good.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, I think him playing the collector, he's definitely mischievous, but I wouldn't say it's probably the lighter of the bunch as far as being the bad guy, but still, nonetheless.
Yeah, he's certainly not. He's certainly not holding anybody hostage or murdering anybody. I think the worst thing he does in this movie is almost hit some kids with a rock.
Yeah,
but we'll get to that later. But I like Tim Robbins in just about everything I've ever seen him in. And this is probably among my favorites of his, where he's so goofy. Mm-hmm. But he's serious at the same time.
Right.
He's not crazy goofy. Look at me, I'm being silly. He's certainly not like a Will Ferrell or anything, but he's a character that takes his job seriously, but at the same time, he knows how to keep it light. And that's the same. That's the same thing to be said about Benicio del Toro as well. The rest of the cast is really good. They're not big name actors, but they all do very, very well in this, and they're all pretty well defined. Maybe a little bit flat here and there, but you get a little bit of a window into everybody's life. Some characters more than others. The camera work is really nice. Sometimes it's smooth and cinematic when it needs to be. You know, they're driving down the road or something, and you get these nice sweeping shots. And then there's other times where they're headed somewhere frantically, and you get sort of a shaky handy cam vibe to it. And then there's moments where it's supposed to be more of a moody atmosphere, and the camera's really close and tight in on you, and it really does a lot to keep the film, you know, feeling good. Not just emotionally good, but feeling like it's a well put together product.
Yeah, and in some of the scenes in the movie, the just kind of the background music choice. I liked some of the music that they had in there. I believe they had "Sweet Dreams" in there by Marilyn Manson. So I mean, that's a favorite of mine.
I'm not a huge fan of licensed music in movies.
Mm-hmm.
Nine times out of ten, I prefer an original score or an original soundtrack. On occasion, though, you do get a movie where they pick licensed music that really works for it. And I think this is one of those films that the licensed soundtrack really, really does work for it.
I think it fit, yeah.
I'm not so sure that I think the Sweet Dreams part really necessarily fit the moment. And we'll get into that in the spoiler section of the review. But it wasn't the absolute worst thing. I didn't think it was the worst thing that they could have played for that. They had a collection of really good, aptly picked music for it. Mac, what are you calling this movie?
Scoring wise, I would call it. I'd give it an 8. Oh. I'd give it an 8.
Strong, yes. Very strong. All right.
I would highly recommend it to anyone. You know, I would just if anyone was ever to ask me, you know, what's on Netflix, what's good on Netflix, for one, you can listen to the podcast. but I would definitely recommend this movie for them to watch. So far, I've recommended a couple movies that we've did some episodes on. So, yeah.
All right. I'm a little more favorable. I give it a 10. I discovered it earlier on in the year. Earlier on in 2018. And I watched it about 3 times, and it's just 10 material to me. I think everything about it works, minus maybe a little bit of the music, but the cast, the script, the way the story is told, the fact that it moves at a really brisk pace. I just really, really like this movie. I feel like it's really uplifting.
Yeah.
You know, not to get into the spoiler territory yet, but every time I watch it, it makes me want to go out and do good things for people. It reaffirms my faith in humanity, because there's people out there that are actually doing stuff like this.
Right.
And maybe they're not taking their, you know, maybe they're not quite so light humored about it. You know, maybe all aid workers aren't as, I don't know, free-spirited maybe, but it does. It reaffirms my faith in humanity, and it makes me feel good, and we live in a world where that's not always the case.
Right, and there's definitely, you know, with the issues that are going on in today's world, you know, it just kind of makes you feel like, you know, there's still hope, and there's still the, you know, generally nice people from day to day.
Right on. Okay, so what do you say we get into the spoiler territory?
I'm all for it.
Okay. As usual, if anybody has not seen this movie and is worried about spoilers, turn this off right now. Go boot up Netflix because you know you got it, because everybody does. And if you don't have it, go get the password from your brother or your sister or your aunt or your uncle or your
grandma. There's always a way not to pay for it. You can find someone that'll let you use it.
There's millions of people out there that have empty slots on their accounts just waiting to be used. So go out. So stop the show right now. Go watch it. And if you don't care about the spoilers, just keep listening. That's fine too. No judgment. At least not from me.
I will judge you.
He's telling the truth. He will judge
you. I will judge you.
All right. Okay. You're back. I'm glad you came back. And if you didn't leave, I'm glad you're still here. We're going to go ahead and get into the spoilers of A Perfect Day. There's not really a whole lot to spoil about the movie. Yeah. It's not a super complex story. There's not like a whole lot of twists and turns. There's maybe two moments total, I would say. And one of those would be the very, very end of the movie.
Yeah, yes. I agree.
But, you know, certainly not. It's certainly not a mystery or anything of the sorts. So I guess we'll just get into it. I love the opening of this movie. It is one of my all-time favorite things. there's two ways to hook an audience at the beginning of a movie. One, start it with a dead body. Two, start it with the creation of a dead body.
Yeah.
If you start your movie with a murder or a corpse, chances are I'm going to stick around probably to the end. Because I want to know
how to get there
or and what's going to happen to it. And if you're not going to explain how it got there, which they really don't, at least we'll get to see what happens to it.
Yeah.
But it's like the beginning of this is so great, though, because it's you hear like these dripping, these drips of water and stuff. And it's all black. And then you start seeing like kind of shapes form and the light kind of shine through things. The camera, I believe, is sitting still, but it's this large dead body being raised up. And as soon as, you know, it takes maybe a minute or two and you realize, oh, that's a dead body.
Right.
And then it really kind of gets into what the movie's all about.
I would say for the first probably 30 minutes of the movie, they're really emphasizing that this guy's big.
Yeah.
They definitely emphasize that he's a big dude, so.
And it moves really quickly. Like, I'd say probably within the first 5 minutes, they have the problem that sets the tone for the entire film. You know, because the whole movie is about them trying to get rid of this, you know, get this body out. So naturally, they got to get to it quickly. But boy, they waste zero time getting to the point. And, you know, that's good because it's an hour and 45 minutes. It's almost, you get into the 2 hour area and it's like, do I really want to spend my Saturday afternoon with 2 hours? But yeah, they really get right to the point. And in the first moment you meet Benicio del Toro, you know, he's at the well and they're pulling the body up and the rope snaps and he's just like, oh. Well, that's kind of a bummer.
Right.
Yeah, he's like really cool and calm about almost everything that happens in this movie. There's a couple moments where he gets a little anxious and it's usually more out of protecting somebody from something else or helping somebody, which is really what this movie's all about. Is it's about helping people. So and Benicio del Toro, yeah, you see him killing people or doing bad things all the time. It's just awesome to see him in this movie doing something good.
Right.
The sole purpose of him is doing something good.
No matter how many movies you've seen him in where he's doing something bad, this will cleanse him up a little bit for you.
Yes. And you know, you meet him for about 5 minutes, you know, the rope snaps, and they certainly waste no time getting into the other characters as well.
Yes.
Tim Robbins' character, B is his name. You know, when you meet Tim Robbins' character, like all the character introductions to this movie are near flawless. Mm. You see Tim Robbins, he's speeding down the road. He's got the radio blaring. He's got this this rookie aid worker, this young woman in the passenger seat, and she's holding on for dear life, and she's clearly terrified of what. You know, of how reckless he is. And they find a dead cow in the road.
Yes, right in the middle, just right laying there right in the middle of the road.
And I didn't know this was a thing until I watched this movie. But apparently people throw dead cows in the road and then they mine one side of it or the other. And I love the part where he's looking at the cow, and he's like, "No, they would want me to go right.
Right.
But if I was coming from the other direction, that would be left."
He even had a diagram of in his car of how he could avoid such thing in the road.
Yes, and that's one of the best things, too, because I love that he's looking at the diagram, and then he flips it around. So he's like, so it could still be either way. And this really does set his character up for who he is throughout the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's a guy that if you have a problem, you just go through it. And he literally just goes through the cow. You know, Sophie, that's the young woman's name.
Yeah, the rookie aide.
Yeah. You know, even though Sophie is very, very against him doing that.
And I like how she was trying to plead, like, going back. But he's like, nope, RPG's back there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. And that's another thing. That's another thing to be said about his character is that he's very well aware of his surroundings. He knows exactly what's going on at just about any given time.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows how to communicate with the locals and you know, keep a good face about everything too.
Yeah.
You know, this is also where you meet Melanie Thierry's character Sophie. You know, as we mentioned, she's the rookie aid worker. You kind of get the idea that she's been on the job for maybe a week.
Yeah, she kind of wants.
She's pretty green.
Yeah, she kind of wants to do everything by the book, and you know that's why. Being with Tim Robbins' character kind of is unsettling for her.
Yeah, yeah, because, and she, even later on in the movie, she really shows how by the book she wants to be. She, like, knows the Geneva Convention.
Yeah.
She knows what articles are what, and she knows all the technical things about peace treaties and stuff like that. She's a good counter to what Robin's character is, but him, just like Benicio del Toro's character, they both know that if there's a will, there's a way.
Right. Yeah.
And she's kind of like, well, there might be a will, but there's not always a way. But she's, which is so weird because by the time the movie's over, she's like the real drive. She wants to get this body out of the well more than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by the end of the movie, she just wants to do it the legal way,
right?
And she's really good. She's a nice character. She's kind of a flat character. There's not a whole lot to her. You don't really know a whole lot about her past or anything like that. In fact, I don't think they mention anything about her.
I don't believe about her other past. Than she's a rookie.
Yeah. And same kind of goes with Tim Robbins. It's the strength of the Tim Robbins character, though, that really, you know, it makes his lack of background or his lack of personal history more forgivable.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he is who he is. it focuses so much more on what on Benicio del Toro and his history of kind of being a skeezy womanizer, but still a lovable goof aid worker who is, you know, still passionate about his job. It's a really strong cast, and that's not even all of them. Later on, you're introduced to Katya, who is like a she's like an inspector of sorts, or advisor maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, she's just kind of there to make sure they're doing, you know, she's going to write up a report on these guys,
right?
and whatever they do wrong, you know, presumably they're going to be, you know, it's going to be in this report. And same goes for whatever they might do right. But it focuses a lot on the history between the her and Benicio del Toro's character, where she, like, left her boyfriend for him. Mm-hmm. They had this, you assume, this steamy affair of sorts. And then he just kind of, like, drops her. Which is kind of, like, it's kind of a dick thing. I'm not saying that it's good to be a womanizer or misogynist or anything like that. But he's so damn lovable. He's just so lovable that it's like, he's probably not the most moral character, but he's like a big teddy bear, you know? And he is trying to do good stuff. He just does a few not great things in his past.
It evens out regardless.
It does. You know, and a big portion of the movie is him trying to be a better person too. It's not really condoning anything that he's done in the past. It's more like he's not going to have an affair. He's not going to do anything untoward because he's almost done there. And he's going to go home and move in with his girlfriend. Or I don't know if it's his girlfriend or his wife.
I don't think they ever really explained their status was. Yeah. But
his significant other.
Yeah.
You know, she's back home, you know, painting the walls or something. And he is out getting corpses from wells and stuff. And when he's done. He's going to go home and spend this time with his significant other. And they're going to have, hopefully, a happy life together. And like I said, a lot of it is him trying to be a good person again. Which I think is a commendable thing for his character. Probably one of my favorite things about this movie, one of my favorite characters, is the translator, Demir. Yeah. It's a very understated role, but he's in 90% of the scenes.
Yeah.
Easily 90% of the scenes. Because if he's not with Del Toro, he's with Tim Robbins. And sometimes he's with Del Toro, sometimes he's with Robbins, and he's usually pretty quiet, but he's still really important to the entire thing.
Right, yeah.
You know, because they can't talk to anyone without him. They don't speak the language. But he's not quite as lovable as everybody else, but he's just as level-headed and just as cool-headed as everybody else. Mm-hmm. There's a scene that I really enjoy where I think is he with Robin's character. They're at this military roadblock or something. And Robbins tells him to lean out the window and
tell
the soldiers, we don't have any cash, don't wash the car.
Right.
And he doesn't want to do it. And so Robbins, like, keeps pushing him. And finally he leans out the window and says, we don't have any cash and don't wash the car or whatever. And you get this weird moment of tension, like, did the joke land? And then one of the soldiers laughs and it becomes this lighthearted thing. So even the sad moments really kind of become something a little bit nicer. And, you know, that's not true of every sad moment. You know, as we'll progress through the film, you know, we'll kind of get to points where you see something bad and it just kind of lingers. I was debating on whether or not I wanted to make a pun. You see something bad and then it just kind of hangs in the air. It kind of
hangs
in
there, yeah.
So I guess we might as well move on to that. Another character that shows up, because this movie's really, for as much as it is about them trying to get this body out of the well, it's really a lot of the human element. It's really a lot about what the about the characters, and it's not long before Benicio del Toro meets up with this little boy, and the boy is trying to get his ball back, and these bully kids are, you know, taking it from him. And they have this little bit of an altercation where you realize that, you know, even the young locals are kind of dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they won't give him the ball. They pull out a gun. And you know,
it's just everyday life for them, I guess.
Yeah. And Del Toro's got this awesome moment there, too, where he manages to keep a level head. He safely gets the kid. You know, he is very rarely thinking about himself in this movie.
Yeah.
He's almost always thinking about somebody else, and that moment with the kid is one of the points that shows that the best. You know, he wants to get the kid's ball back, and then when he can't, it's all about keeping him safe. And he gets, you know, he saves him, and then the kid is with them throughout the rest of the movie. You know, so now they've got this. Now they've got kind of two. They kind of got two things to do.
Right.
A, they need rope for the body, and then they need to, you know, they want to find a ball for the boy, and like I said, you know, it's all about doing good. That's all this movie is. It's just about doing good, and everything the characters do really reflects that. But as they're traveling the countryside, you kind of get a feel for. You know, I don't know how accurate of a depiction this film is to aid workers or Yugoslavia for that matter, but you get this idea of the UN bureaucracy, because the UN can't do anything with this well, and they can't let the aid workers do anything with the well. You know, they put up layers and layers of red tape for these people to have to get through, and then at the same time, you have the locals to deal with that don't necessarily have official red tape, but they're not necessarily helpful. And then there's a scene where B and Demir, the translator, they're in a shop, and B finds a rope. I think it's before the flag.
Oh.
Yeah, they're in the shop. B finds a rope, and the shopkeeper won't sell it to him because, you know, he doesn't want to be a part of whatever's going on, and he doesn't want to mess with a dead body. I think the shopkeeper's excuse is that if there's a guy that ended up in a well, he probably wasn't that good of a guy to begin with.
Right.
And then you get to the point that you just mentioned. With the flag, you know, they find a rope, it's on a flagpole, and they can't get the guy there to let them use the rope, because if he takes the flag down, you know, it more or less paints a target on him.
Yeah.
You know, he will become dead if he puts the flag down. And so it really shows like A, you have this governmental red tape that is just constantly working against you. And then you have this local, not necessarily red tape, but you have these local traditions that you know, are certainly working against you as well. And it just kind of keeps piling up and piling up to, it's like, how are they going to do this? But they persist. And that's you know, another thing to be said about the movie, is that this is about, not only is it about people helping each other, it's about people persisting.
Yeah.
They don't just hit. They don't just hit a block, you know, just like at the beginning. They don't just hit a dead cow and turn around. They keep going. The boy eventually says, "Yeah, I know where you guys can find some rope." And so they're like, "Okay, well, let's go get it then." And he takes them to his home. And this is yet another one of my favorite parts of the movie, is they get there and the rope is there, but it's tied to a dog. And the dog is not friendly. So they go in and they investigate a little bit more. I really like how this film, it does a great job of pairing the characters. It's almost always two characters at a time. And it's not always the same two characters at a time. Sometimes it's Del Toro and Robbins. Sometimes it's Robbins and the Rookie. Sometimes it's Robbins and the Boy. Sometimes, you know, there's a variety of combinations that come and go from this, but it's almost always two characters at a time. And when there's like four people in the truck, there's the focus is still on two characters. Yeah. Which is maybe a little unfortunate for the characters that are sitting in the back of the truck. But I mean, they're not like completely left out of the thing, but they're clearly not the main draw. But when Del Toro's character and Sophie go into the house, and you really kind of get a feel for how green she is. Yeah. And they've kind of been pointing this out throughout the entire thing too, but you know, she's never been in a house like this before. She doesn't know exactly what happened. It's all like torn apart, and there's a hole in the roof and stuff, and Del Toro explains that, I forget how they did it, but he explains that they built like a bomb that would blow the roof off. Mm-hmm. And she sits down on the couch, and I still don't know if he's joking or not. And she never knew. You could tell that her character doesn't know if he's joking or not, but she sits down on a couch and he mentions, well, they could mine the couch so that if you do come back, you won't be back for long. And, you know, she kind of stands up and you never really know if he's serious or not. They keep progressing, and it really moves into, this is probably the darkest part of the entire movie. And it's a dark moment that really does linger. They get into the garage, and they find the ball for the boy. And Sophie opens up the garage door, and you see behind her, you just see some feet kind of dangling. Yeah. And Del Toro's immediate reaction is Sophie, don't turn around. And I just love that so much. Because just like with the boy at the beginning, his focus is always protecting those around him. He's such, even though he has a selfish past, he is so selfless. And I love the part. I just love that he's constantly, he's just, you know, don't look, keep just focus on me. And of course, you know, you tell somebody not to look, she looks, and you get like this kind of touching emotional moment between the two of them. And sadly, that's how they get the rope. And all the characters after that, until the next scene, the characters all remain very somber and very downtrodden. Yeah. And you have this tragedy, but this tragedy is what's going to prevent more tragedy. You know, because now they have the rope. Now they can go get the body out of the well, which is really, I don't know if that's irony or not. Might need to call Alanis Morissette on that one. But they get the rope and they go do their job. You know, they get to the well. And so now we're like really kind of getting close to the end of the movie where, you know, they've got their rope. They're ready to finally do what they've been trying to do this entire time. And you feel like a large weight's kind of been lifted off your shoulders when Del Toro's down in the well and they're finally lifting the body, and it stops. And he looks up, and I know the first time I saw this, I expected the worst. It wouldn't fit the movie at all to be something violent or incredibly tragic, mm-hmm. but that's still what I expected.
Yeah. And I mean, what I initially thought was, you know, maybe that the rope was going to snap almost right up there to the top, and then it just snaps, and, you know, maybe Del Toro goes down and hurts himself, and now they have to try and worry about getting two bodies out of there, so...
Man, you're like extra grim. I'm like, I don't know what's worse, a broken leg Del Toro under a dead body in a well,
right?
Or a massacre up top.
Well, and I mean, what if it was a combination of both? You know, there's a massacre going up top, and
the rope gives out, so then, you know, whoever killed the people look over and they're like, well, now you're stuck down there with the body and just walk away.
Oh, man. That would be so depressing. But no, luckily that is not the case. Del Toro gets up there and then, while it's certainly not an ideal situation, it's not a bloody tragedy. The UN is up there and they're pretty much saying, no, you guys can't do this.
Yeah.
You have no jurisdiction. You can't be here. It's out of our hands, but you can't help.
Right.
And Sophie's really upset. Sophie is ultimately more upset about this than anybody else.
Well, and I think it goes back to when they were having the conference saying that they can't go get the body. And she said, you know, well, it might be mined, and she was making the complaints. So I think when they brought that up at the end, the reason why they couldn't go get the body, I think that probably hit her the hardest.
Right. Right. And in reference to that, earlier on in the movie, I think we kind of actually skipped over the whole conference
thing. Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, she brings up, while she's quoting the Geneva Convention, she brings up that the body might be mined, mm-hmm. in an attempt to get the UN to act on it. And really, that you're right, that does come back to get her. And you can see it breaks her heart, kind of, that she's now part of the reason why they can't do anything about this.
Right. Especially when, you know, you see the, I don't know if I'd call it character development, but, you know, where she at first was, like you said, so green. And then, you know, you come to the end of the movie where she wants to, you know, she wants to be as involved as possible to, you know, by any means necessary, really. So.
Yeah, yeah. And I think even at the beginning of the movie, Robin's character, he's like looking down the well and he asks her if it's her first corpse.
Yeah.
and she's, I think she says, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is that, and that's a funny moment too. But yeah, if you want in on those jokes, you go ahead and go watch the movie. But it is a really funny moment. But it is very disheartening, and so they you know, they pack up and they go. And I remember when I first saw this, I was really sad. You know, we mentioned in the Caliber episode that I like sad endings. I like sad endings if the movie itself is sad. I don't like sad endings if the movie itself is supposed to be uplifting.
Right.
So yeah. when they drive off. Actually, not even when they drive off. When the UN guy cuts the rope, mm-hmm. and drops the body back into the well, I felt my heart break a little bit. I was like, no, this can't be how it's supposed to be.
Right.
And you know, and when they leave the body there, I just felt really sad about that. But they bring it back up with a joke, you know, because they're on their way. Mm-hmm. They get a call to the next place. It's like flooding and sewage, you know, improperly made sewage lines, mm-hmm. or ditches or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And Sophie says something like, oh, is this going to be really bad? And Robin's character is like, oh, no, it'll be fine. So long as it doesn't rain. So, of course, what happens? It starts raining.
Yeah.
Which, you know, ultimately leads to the well flooding and the body being pulled out of the well, and you get and it's this wonderful moment that it's not necessarily a moment that reaffirms your faith in humanity, but it's a moment that maybe gives you pause to believe in whatever higher powers that be are out there watching over these people.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you're watching the movie, and this whole time you see, like you said, the locals kind of working against the AIDS. But then you come to the end of the movie where there's locals that are, you know, helping pull the body out. And so, I mean, yeah, I agree. It definitely reassures you for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that's it. That's like where the movie ends. I will say this about the movie, though, about the ending of the movie. As much as I love the fact that the body eventually gets out of the well, part of me still thinks there was still a dead body in your well. You guys don't have the aid workers anymore. And now you have all this contaminated water in your well.
Yeah.
Because the rain's not flooding out all the bad stuff from a dead body.
Mm-hmm.
And the aid workers probably, you know, are unaware or will be unaware for the foreseeable future that you have a dead, that it's out of there. So no one's going to go back to purify the water. So even at the end of this happy moment, at the uplifting ending, part of me still, I don't want to feel that way, but part of me still is like,
the body's out.
You guys are drinking dead body water,
right? The body's out. Now we're just going to go right back to drinking the water.
Yeah. It's like, what are you guys going to do now? I think that about wraps it up.
Just a quick question for you, T. I know you've seen the movie more than once. Does that part where they stop pulling the body, does that ever change for you? Do you still feel sad every time? Or?
I do feel sad every time. Even though I know that it's all going to work out in the end, I still feel sad every time I see it. It still just hurts. It's like, because you're so close. You're so close. And I wouldn't necessarily want the movie to end any other way.
Yeah.
But have you ever seen Old Yeller?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
I almost said no.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, because it was old when I was a kid. But spoiler alert for Old Yeller, it's kind of like when the dog dies. It's still sad, even though you know it's coming. And Old Yeller is a conversation for another day. I think the dog had it coming.
Right.
But, he was rabid. You got to do what you got to do, you know. But,
hopefully no one calls PETA or anything.
As far as I'm concerned, a rabid dog might as well be a zombie. But, that's a whole discussion for a whole nother day. We're, coming up on the end of the episode. We've almost hit an hour. We'll see what it looks like after it's all cleaned up and edited. But, I think this is a pretty good pretty good ending for the show.
Yes.
So, everyone, if you stuck around to the end, or if you watched the movie and enjoyed it, certainly let us know what you thought of it. You can follow us on Twitter.
I believe it's at 2andAMovie.
I think you might be right.
And as far as, you can also follow us on Instagram, and I believe it's also 2andAMovie.
I think he's correct. It'll be in the show notes anyway, so you can find us. You can find it there. Hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope you come back next week when we will be talking about Wind River, which, I'll be honest, after As Above, So Below, Mac has redeemed himself. He brought his A game for this one, so you're definitely going to want to come back for that. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.